This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living. That is Black from Corrupt Vision.
Hell yeah.
I'm Luis Romero. I am the Fuck Fentanyl guy. Welcome to the Fuck Fentanyl podcast. Today I got my homeboy, Eric. What's up, dude?
What's up, homie? What's good?
So, man, Eric's been one of my really good homies, man. I met over the past year. We go to a home group and on Tuesdays and Mondays and stuff, and man, I fucking love Eric, dude. Like, he's fucking...
Well, I love you too, brother.
Yeah, man. He's, like, just a real dude. He'll tell you exactly, you know what I mean, what he thinks. But he does it in a very respectful way. And he's always just been kind of stand up. And I really admire his recovery, too. Just for, you know, just being so early on, you know what I mean? And something you don't really see too often. And, man, I know he feels really... passionate about my brand as well, so I definitely had to have him on. So, Eric, I just, you know, you can just start with a little bit of how you're growing up and all that.
Right on, man. Yeah, thanks for having me on here, and I definitely am really inspired by you and your program too, man.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, you're a very genuine person, and you know, when you asked me to do this, I like almost didn't want to come on because, one, like, the social anxiety and, like, trying to diminish my ego and all this shit, right? Yeah. And it's like, oh, but for you, you know, I want to do
yeah.
it. And the fact that, like, you know, recovery is something that I do take very seriously. And, you know, maybe one person will hear my story. It might just help them a little bit. So that's what this shit's all about, right?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm, like... go about this like I'm leading a meeting or
you could do whatever the fuck you want, man.
And then I was thinking about it. I was like, well, what about the traditions, you know?
Oh, shit. But,
so we'll just leave out the names of organizations or
perfect.
Whatever.
Perfect. That's cool with me. I don't give a shit.
But yeah, basically, I mean, like, I don't know. Usually when I start telling my story or something, I usually just kind of preface with the fact that, like, I grew up with, like, an alcoholic father who was, you know, never around and stuff. And I always, like, swore to myself that I'd be, like, as far different of a person than he was, mm-hmm. you know. And obviously that conviction that I held for myself was not holding up, you yeah. know. And so I had my first intoxicating substance when I was... probably around 12 years old.
Okay.
You know, and I always grew up just full of fear and anxiety, social yeah. anxiety. Always felt like I never fit in anywhere. And just afraid of everything, you know. And
yeah,
having that first drink, it just, all that shit went out the window. Mm-hmm. You know, that liquid courage kicked in, as they call it.
And, yeah.
You know, I felt like I could just do anything, be myself, was more charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't think too much about it. I didn't know what the fuck addiction was at that age.
Oh, no.
You know?
Fuck no, yeah.
I thought that my dad was a drunk because he chose to be.
You know? Yeah.
And this shit, it's not a fucking choice, you know? It's a disease for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
So I didn't think too much of it, but something changed in me, you know? And I just came to the realization that I wanted to not be sober as frequently as I could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so at that age, alcohol obviously not being accessible. My friends and I would, you know, basically just look for a high anywhere we could and started huffing different chemicals and shit in the garages and,
yeah,
you know, just anything to kind of get a little fix or whatever.
Right.
And then started smoking weed at 14, and that very much became an everyday thing, you know. And grew up having an older brother, 3 years older, and two older cousins the same age as him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were always into that shit, too. So it just, for one, being a product of my environment, it just seemed like the normal thing to do.
Yeah, right.
You know, to get fucked up and party and stuff. So that was the path that I started going toward for sure. And, you know, getting into high school, hanging out with older people, alcohol was around, became more prevalent, started doing that. You know, it became like a regular weekend thing.
Mm-hmm.
At like 14 or 15, had my first, you know, case of alcohol, like alcohol poisoning.
Oh, really? That young?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I was like, felt like I was hungover for a fucking week. And of course, just the next weekend, just went out and did the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, well, this is my life now.
Yeah.
You
know? The insanity was already starting to build.
Oh, right away, dude. Right away. And, you know, so started experimenting with other drugs, you know, just what does this pill do? What does this line do? Mm. You know? And like I said, anything to get a fix and just not be sober.
Right.
And then probably around the age of 17, found the love of my fucking life, opiates.
Oh, shit.
You know? And of course, you know, like a lot of people, it started out with just a Vicodin.
Yeah.
You know, just popping a pill, and that one was a different high than I had ever experienced, and I just felt, you know, I just felt the most comfortable that I ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this is it, you know. This is what I want to feel like forever. And I did my fucking damnedest to do that, you know, and
I can relate to that.
Still didn't know anything about addiction. I definitely didn't see myself becoming an addict or addicted to any substance in general, you know. Like, I smoked weed every day before that because I chose to.
Right? Yes, of course.
Obviously, those are two very different ball games.
Yeah.
You know, and
that you lost the power of choice when you started doing Vicodin?
Yeah, I didn't realize it at first for a few years, you know. I pretty much always had it, could always get it and shit.
Yeah.
And of course, like, went from like Vicodin to Norcos to fucking Oxy.
Yeah.
And then fentanyl.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 21, I think, that's when I was probably introduced to fentanyl for the first time. This was around 2011.
Oh, shit, dude, that's way early. Was this the medicinal fentanyl?
Yeah. So my girlfriend at the time, we were getting it from her dad who was prescribed it.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and it started with, like, him just, like, giving it to us here and there.
Yeah.
And then us fucking stealing his fucking meds.
That's so cool, you guys.
Yeah, fucked up, dude. And, you know, he was like a retired war vet, disabled from like fucking Agent Orange friendly fire and shit. Ooh. So like he fucking needed these meds.
Yeah. You know? I was about to say, they don't just give you fentanyl. No. When it's like prescribed to you.
Back then, like it was given out a little more lenient, you know?
Yeah.
But that shit's
So you got hooked on that when you were 21?
Yeah, about 21. So like probably like a year prior to that. Was the first time that I had gotten dope sick.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I realized that I was addicted to this shit.
Yeah.
I was dependent on it. You know, and at first, like, I just thought that I was, like, hungover or something.
Yeah.
right. And then, you know, after I, like, got well, did a fix, and it completely went away.
Oh, shit.
You know, that's where I put two and two together. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I just got to fucking try harder to fucking stay on this shit 24/7.
Right.
I don't want to fucking...
That's a full-time job right there.
100%, man. And so, all of my efforts in life just went toward getting fucking loaded like that.
Yeah.
You know? And went on for several fucking years. And... probably around the age of 20, 25.
Mm-hmm.
Around 2015 is when I started to get the idea that I wanted to get clean.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay.
Of course, it just started with the idea of it.
Okay. Yeah. A little seed.
Yeah. And so, like, I would try kicking here and there.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just... fucking up my life left and fucking right, you know, like got to the point because like I was a functional addict for a fucking long time, man. Like,
yeah. It sounds like you were working and able to handle business.
Yeah.
While you're doing this.
Working in the restaurant industry, you know.
So, oh yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. You worked in restaurants. Yeah.
Drugs are very prevalent
in
that industry and that lifestyle and shit, you know? So
yeah, dude.
Yeah, it was just finding that right balance of...
What did you do in the restaurants?
I was a cook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The cooks always had the shit.
For sure. And so I would just find that right balance of, doing enough fentanyl to be well and enough fucking blow to have the energy to work through it. And then enough Xanax to fucking, like... balance it all.
I love it. The roller coaster, baby.
Yeah, dude, just find that fucking perfect balance to where I could still do my job. And
it's like, I'm gonna do some cocaine at 1 o'clock, and then I'm gonna do and then when I get back home and pop some Xanax and get a little sleep and then
yeah it was fucking
all that.
It was terrible. And so yeah, I got to a point where like I made the decision that I wanted to get clean. At least off of opiates.
Okay, yeah.
Because that was what was fucking my life up.
A fair compromise.
No, and so the girl I was dating at the time, we were living together, and she was an addict in the exact same boat that I was, but she didn't want to get clean, you know? And it was very toxic relationship. We only stayed together for the fucking drug use, you know? Yeah. She made more money, so like she had the funding for it, and I had the plugs.
It's
like a very sick
partnership.
Yeah, coexistence of that, you know.
And, oh no, shit.
So we had a dog together, and this dog, I fucking loved this baby girl more than fucking anything, more than opiates, you know. And this dog, she had seizures. She was only a year and a half at this time.
Oh shit.
Yeah, and you know, I knew that I had to get clean to get back to full-time work so that I could provide for the dog and her seizure meds and everything.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was the end of 2017. I started to go hit some meetings. And, fuck, dude, I had weaned myself off with subs. And luckily, I did my fucking research on Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I saw people just getting fucking hooked on that.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. And it's so abused.
And their doctors, like, keeping them on it.
Yep.
You know.
Oh, big time. Because they make money that way.
Exactly. It's so fucked, dude. And, you know, I had found out that Suboxone withdrawal was fucking terrible. You know, other friends had told me that, and that the half-life of it is extremely long as opposed to heroin and fentanyl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. When I kicked heroin, it was only like a week of grueling. And then after that, you're kind of fine. I mean, you're just...
I don't know about fine.
I mean, you're able to do shit.
Yeah, the physical shit at least is gone.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Oh, the mental thing. Oh, yeah. That shit stuck with me for months.
Yeah, the post-acute withdrawal syndrome, they call it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that fucking just crippling anxiety and depression, that shit.
Fuck yeah.
Months, like you said, you know?
Months.
But, like, the actual withdrawal of Suboxone, I heard fucking can take a month or two, depending on how long
it is. The physical part.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
And so, luckily, I had done my research on that, and I was just taking the absolute bare minimum of Suboxone to be well. Well enough to not want to fucking blow my brains out, right?
Yeah, dude.
And
that's really fucking smart, because so many people would just be like, oh, yeah, sure. I'll just...
yeah, just take fucking 16 milligrams.
I'll take 16. And
you're basically just, I don't know.
And then they go to 15, they're like, oh.
You know, and like everyone's reaction to specific drugs are different, but like subs would make me nod a bit sometimes, you know?
Oh yeah, fuck yeah, dude.
So like
it's a drug. It's a drug.
100%, man. So. Yeah. And so I got off that shit.
Yeah.
And immediately turned to alcohol. You know,
yeah,
every fucking day. Oof. But I was like, well, fuck, dude, I'm not doing heroin and fentanyl anymore.
Yeah, so like, yeah, you're doing
good. I was like, oh, I beat this shit. I'm a fucking god, you know. And, yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Good shit. And you know, alcohol is fucking socially acceptable. You know, in that age group, especially, you know, like my late 20s, it's like encouraged to have fun. It's fucking everywhere.
Yeah, that's so fucking true, dude.
And, you know, like looking back in retrospect, I didn't want to get sober. I just didn't want to be dope sick anymore.
Yeah. You know?
And a hangover was...
was better.
Hell of a lot better than...
Oh, fuck
shit.
Yeah.
You know, not even in the same fucking ballpark.
No, it's not, dude.
And
how much would you drink to replace this void that you had to fill in after kicking, you know, opiates?
At least to like be okay, be well, I guess you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a 6-pack of strong IPAs to start.
Yeah, just okay. You know, I can function.
Yeah, like a half pint to a pint of whiskey.
Oh shit!
Yeah, just to like. Be okay.
You're fine. You'll get through the day with that.
Yeah. Oh no, not get through the day.
Oh, not even get through the day. Okay.
Get the day started.
Get the day started. All right. Here we go.
You know, it was that was fine for a while, and so like I was a very, very functional alcoholic at that point too, you know. And so like right back to the kitchen industry and shit. And, you know, I'd still do any other drug that was put in front of me as long as it wasn't opiates.
Oh, I see.
And so, actually very shortly after I got clean from fentanyl and opiates in general, that dog that I did it for, Bayou was her name.
Uh-huh.
She passed away like 6 months after I got clean.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. Her seizures just got so bad, mm-hmm. you know. They think that she had a brain tumor and it was just it was just inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I had to put her down, and I told myself that if I like, you know, ever abused opiates again, that her death would have been in vain, you know, cuz I got clean for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to stay clean for her. Mm. So that's kind of how that's I thought of it.
Yeah, I get that.
But like I said, alcohol and any other drug, fucking game
on. Yeah, game on, baby.
That's the fucking insanity, you know, and how I rationalized it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, being a very functional alcoholic again for several years.
Jesus Christ. And you worked throughout, like, drinking like this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That wasn't a problem at all.
Wow.
Yeah, and until it was, right?
Yeah.
And so for, five more years of that, it kept snowballing.
Okay.
Know? Fucking drinking more and more and more and more and more over those 5 years. And
Jesus.
Got to a point where, you know, I was like in the same boat that I was with the fentanyl use, you know, mm-hmm. like realized that I was completely dependent on the alcohol, you know, I'd wake up with crippling anxiety. And until I fucking started drinking that morning, like I couldn't function at all.
Yeah.
You know, so, I was fucking working in a kitchen buying blow off of my chef.
The head chef?
Yeah.
They're good source of cocaine.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And it became like that fucking Groundhog Day, you know. I'd fucking wake up, drink enough to be functional, go to work with a heavy fucking buzz.
Yeah.
As soon as I'd get on my break, I'd go chug another tall can or something.
Mm-hmm.
And doing fucking blow throughout my shift as well. As soon as we'd close up the kitchen, we'd get our shift drink. It was supposed to be like a pint of whatever draft we wanted.
Okay.
And I'd fucking make it four, of course, of the strongest IPA that we had there.
Fuck yeah.
And then from there, our whole kitchen crew, every night, you know, we would just go to the local dive bar.
Wow. So after all that drinking, just to start and get through the shift, you're going to get... To go to the bar, get wasted.
Yeah, I just go to the bar, get wasted until it would close out at 2 a.m. Fucking do enough blow to balance out, of course.
Uh-huh.
And then fucking being a dumbass and driving home drunk fucking every night like that. And it was like, you know, 20, 25-minute drive home every night. I'm so fucking lucky that, you know, I never fucking hurt anybody or myself. Never even got a fucking DUI, man. Like,
wow. Did you ever get into an accident or some sort of collision?
No, nothing, man. Jesus. Like I said, very fucking lucky, very grateful that I never hurt anybody doing that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when I'd get home, I'd have to fucking, you know, drink a couple more just to fucking get to bed from the fucking blow and shit. Wake up and do it all over again.
All over again.
Yeah, it was fucking terrible.
God damn.
Finally got to a point where, you know, I was at work one day. I was on mushrooms, Xanax, fucking drunk and blow.
Nice little cocktail you got.
Yeah, I was like prepping before service, before the restaurant opened.
Uh-huh.
And I had like this, like a mental breakdown out of nowhere, you know? And
really?
Yeah. And I just came to this like realization. I was like, I can't fucking do this anymore. And I fucking quit on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just fucking bounced out. And at that point, I started doing Uber Eats. That's when I started doing
that
shit.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was fucking driving around all day, delivering people food with a fucking tall can of IPA in my cup holder at all times.
Wow, dude.
Just driving around drunk. And
Jesus.
Did that for a little while. I was dating a girl at the time. Her and I broke up, and you know, I basically just used that as an excuse to not have any more accountability.
Okay.
You know, I did
the heartbreak.
But more so, just I didn't have to hide my drinking anymore.
Oh, I see.
I didn't have to show up for anybody anymore.
Mm.
And so I just went fucking full isolation mode.
Oh shit.
You know, and just started hanging out in my fucking bedroom 24/7, getting all fucking loaded, all pathetic like that.
Yeah.
You know, and like I'd still go to shows and shit here and there.
Yeah.
And, dude, during the last year of that alcoholism run and shit, like I had all at shows, man. Yeah. I had bruised my left ribs,
mm-hmm.
broke my left hand. I broke my right hand on someone's head in the pit. Yeah. Nose busted, lip busted, and then I broke 3 ribs on my right side.
Jesus.
All at hardcore shows and shit.
It's a rough, a little rough cruise sometimes in those shows. And you're fucking fucked up.
I was that drunk asshole. Fucking going to a punk show and hardcore dancing, like, you're gonna get your ass beat.
If you're asking for it, they will give it to you.
Yeah, I was definitely asking for it, and I definitely deserved those broken ribs. And it was a couple days after that, you know, like, I knew that I wanted to quit drinking for a while.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready, you know, I had to experience some more misery. You know, and after that, yeah, just fucking sitting in my room, drinking myself to fucking oblivion. You know, it was at that point where I fucking look in the mirror and not even recognize myself looking back, you know, and I just fucking hated the person looking back at me.
Yeah.
You know, and I had, gratefully, man, just enough self-awareness to see that I was heading toward previous, like, a similar rock bottom like I did with the fentanyl use.
I see.
And
so there was that self-realization that, you know, you just traded substances.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, just reaching enough pain and misery to fucking surrender, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking up meetings, and I was going to meetings for a while here and there, you know, because I knew I had a fucking problem.
Yeah.
You know, that step one was done years before I actually gave this shit a shot.
Mm-hmm. You're just putting it to action now.
Yeah, but I was showing up to meetings and, you know, kind of just hoping to catch the shit by osmosis, as they say. Like, you know, like, I didn't even know that there was a fucking program to work. I saw
There's actually, like work involved. To do? Yeah. Yeah.
You don't just show up cured.
Yeah. Does it work like that? You just can't get so inspired that you can stay sober forever?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I'd see these steps on the wall and shit and just think it's just something that you, like, agree in your head. You know?
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Inventory. Nah.
Yeah, dude. And, of course, seeing the fucking God word in those steps on the wall. That was what kept me out of the rooms for so fucking long.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know,
I have that same struggle.
Yeah, a lot of us did, and that's why we hit our Tuesday night meeting.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, too, I want to preface, if, like, anybody is listening to this and you need somebody to talk to, you know, like, I don't know if you could put my Instagram on the title.
Oh, yeah, I will. Absolutely.
You know, if you ever just are struggling with addiction, you can reach out to me on there. And I'm by no means, like, some type of fucking influence or anything like that.
No, you don't mind. You don't mind if I blow your amenities.
I don't, man.
Instagram handle, Eric Dub.
Yeah, Eric Dub 13.
There you go.
So like, yeah, man, like, this shit is no fucking joke. And, you know, after working my steps and shit and, like, finding a purpose for the first time in my life, it's like, at this point, it's just to help other addicts and alcoholics climb out of the fucking hell that I was living in for 19 years, man.
Yeah,
and,
dude.
You know, this shit is no fucking joke. It's very much life or death.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to where I was talking about the with God being in the steps and shit. Because, like, I was raised Catholic.
Oh, no shit. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah. I dropped out of that shit when I was 12 years old. Cause,
oh, okay.
Like, learning about it in, like, world history class in, like, middle school, junior high, and, like, all the fucking violence associated with the Catholic Church. And
oh, yeah, dude, they're savage.
And, you know, just all the fucking hate involved, you know, like, all the homophobia and it's like, oh, you're gay, you're going to hell. And at 12 years old, I'm like, you know, like, this religion is supposed to be, like, about love. This just doesn't line up. You
seems
know?
Like they don't like you. You just go to hell.
Yeah. So I quit with that shit. And
okay,
you know, I was very much an atheist, and you know, even an atheistic Satanist too.
Oh, I
you
see.
Know, I really, really liked the principles of modern day Satanism. You know, it's okay. just like all about being a good person. You know,
just a very unconventional way of presenting it.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people get it twisted. You know, yeah. and but yeah, it's a lot of the best people I ever met are fucking Satanists. You
I
know?
See.
It's not about worshiping the devil or anything.
I know. It's just like, it's very easy to get that twisted.
Of course. Yeah, with the name. It's just about like being a good person and a humanitarian in many senses. And that really aligned with like, you know, my like activism,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I've always been into civil rights activism and shit. And yeah, it worked for a while.
You know, and I just want to emphasize, you know, to my listeners that, you know, Eric is like seriously like one of the most like non-hateful people I've ever met, dude. And I you know, because I grew up around Catholicism. For me, it was just kind of like I was a kid and I just didn't buy it. You know, I didn't see it. So, you know, and I went to, you know, to do the Catholic stuff. They made me drink that shitty ass wine and that fucking bread. And I don't know. I just wasn't getting into it. And I just was like, well, why is there other religions? And why, you know what I mean? Why do people fight over it? And why, you know what I mean? Yeah. Why do the worst of humans, you know, are, you know, capable come out because of their religion beliefs and stuff like that? And so that, you know, then I just go farther, deeper into it. And then, you know, but, you know, I run into, you know, Eric, you know, who, you know, he talks about, you know, Satanism, but, you know, he's just like, he really, you know, is like this, like, super, like, cool, nice fucking dude that, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll introduce Eric to, like, my family, you know, this guy's a fucking cool fucking dude, man. And, you know what I mean? Because, yeah, you know, you hear Satanism, you think of somebody with, you know, they're trying to, you know, probably implant devil horns on their head. And
nothing's wrong with that either. And no, like, straight up, like, if, you know, if I meet someone who's Christian and their higher power is aligned with that, you know, like, good for them.
Yeah.
Like, whatever works, yeah. man. Like, if you're a good person, you're a good person. It's just, it's not for me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And, I found that out later on that, you know, these 12-step programs, they are not religious programs. They're spiritual programs,
yeah.
you know, and...
That's very true.
I was granted that gift of desperation, you know, after being in enough pain from my addictions and alcoholism, you know, that I just... You know, with that gift of desperation, they often say, like, you're granted honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had enough open-mindedness to come to meetings and, for the first time in my life, sit down, shut the fuck up, and listen, you know, instead of thinking that, one, I fucking am God, mm-hmm. you know? Or believing that, like, this shit can work for people.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd show up to meetings and see people fucking smiling and laughing. And, you know, probably for the first time in my life, I experienced this fucking unconditional love. And it was from fucking strangers in the rooms, man.
Mm-hmm.
These people that didn't owe me anything. They didn't know me. Some fucking sketchy junkie alcoholic coming in, you know. And I started doing like PB recovery was where I really got my start. And so like, you know, me being like a fucking punk and not being as like clean cut, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, there, yeah. Eric looks a little different from a typical PB recovery man.
but like I said, man, that love that I was shown, man, that just that kept me coming back. You know?
Yeah.
It really did. And
yeah.
You know, so yeah, I fucking started to get into my steps and yeah, I just, the God thing was really tough for me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of just ignored it, you know, and I was told to like substitute it,
uh-huh.
you know, different abbreviations.
Oh, I see.
Great outdoors, group of drunks, group of drug addicts, good orderly direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just like, you know, substituted it all
in
the steps and stuff. And, you know, just continuing on with it, with my recovery and shit, you know, I honestly found like my own path of spirituality.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't fucking explain it. I don't know how the fuck it works, man. And it, like I said, man, it's definitely not aligned with any religious path that I was like, you know, dragged into when I was young.
Yeah.
But, you know, just this power of the universe, you know, whatever it is, man, mm-hmm. it's a fucking trip.
Yeah.
But,
some entity bigger than you.
Yeah. You know, and that's what's cool about a lot of these 12-step programs, you know, is like, you know, they say like find a higher power of your own understanding, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a monotheistic God, so to speak.
It could be whatever
the fuck you want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's cool.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, you're absolutely right.
And so it actually led me to, you know, becoming spiritual when I came in as a very fucking militant atheist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that like that could just completely change for me, for someone like me, that's fucking crazy, man.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it led me personally to discovering Wicca.
Oh.
You know, and that was like a way for me to kind of branch out my spirituality. And that's mm-hmm. that's been a really big aspect of my personal recovery lately too.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I started getting into that the end of last year.
Oh, can you explain a little bit more about it?
It's basically just like, for me at least personally, because like it's not an organized religion, you know, it's kind of just like a personal path for me.
I see.
And it's like you know, tapping into the elements of nature.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And
fuck yeah.
You know, that's definitely a power greater than me.
It man, is.
You know. And
try to push back a wave.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've heard a lot of people say it
that's
way.
That's a common one.
Yeah. But it's
kind of basic, but it's
hey, whatever works.
It works, right?
Yeah. And yeah, honestly, finding these rooms, working these steps, and like sponsoring other people and shit.
Yeah, dude.
It's been the coolest, the best thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. And I fought it for so many fucking years. You know, I doubted that shit could work at all.
Right. Hell yeah, when I first got in there, this is all bullshit.
Straight up, man. Yeah. And it's a fucking trip, you know, and it's started out feeling like a chore, and it grew into like a lifestyle for me now.
Mm.
You know, like
I like that.
I choose to go to meetings now.
Yeah.
You know, I choose to help other addicts and alcoholics now. And
yeah, man. I mean, dude, I mean, I'm not trying to throw your business out there, but yeah, at one point I had three big commitments, you know, like time consuming ones, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, fuck. Like, that's too much.
It was too much.
But you did it.
Because I think I had fucking 8 sponsees at the time,
oh,
too.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, no, never again. I'm not taking on that many at once.
I mean, I guess you're hungry. You're just like, come on, give me, give me, give me.
Yeah, you know, I was just fucking on fire, and they just kept lining up. You know, and I was like, well, I got the free time. I got the fucking energy to do it. You know, like, yeah, let's fucking help some people.
Right.
You know, and I was told it's like a numbers game, you know, like, fuck, the percentage of us that actually get this thing and make it and stay clean and sober is such a small percentage, you know, like I'm so fucking grateful that I'm one of the ones that have stuck around and.
Yeah, dude.
I don't ever want to go back out and experience the fucking pain and misery that I was.
Yeah, dude.
You know, like, if I fucking went back out, I probably wouldn't make it back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't even know that, there's so many fucking countless times that I feel like I should have died.
Yeah, no, for sure, dude.
because I like with my fentanyl use especially, like, you remember, well, fuck, you might have been clean at that point, but I'm sure you heard about like the fake blues that were coming around here.
Oh yeah.
Like the Roxy 30s, but they
were, okay, I've heard of that.
But they were pressed coming in from Mexico, and
oh no shit.
Yeah, they were made with fentanyl, you know. So like,
oh fuck, dude.
Me and my little crew, we'd like intentionally seek those ones out.
Yeah, because they were potent.
They were potent, but like people were dying off of that shit because. You don't know exactly how fucking strong that specific pill is.
That's what I was about to say. Like, I don't think they will measure it like correctly because fentanyl is so strong that, you know, if you give it like an extra, I don't know, point of a gram, I mean, that's the difference between someone dying or not.
Yeah, because fentanyl's, what they say, fucking 10 times stronger than...
I think it's 50.
50 times stronger
it's 50, dude.
Than modern heroin?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an outrageous number. Like,
so especially for someone who doesn't have a tolerance to opiates.
Yeah, you
know, that's how people go out so fucking.
That's
how,
yeah.
And I was thinking about it driving out here, like down south San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I come out here, I think of my old homie Kevo, and he passed away.
Yeah,
from this shit, you know, and
that's so sad, man.
He wasn't even using opiates, you know. He was doing Xanax, and he did a fucking. Fucking wrong pill, man.
No shit. And he thought it was Xanax, or he just just came across. He just
it
found
was,
the pill and just did it.
No. Yeah, he was like doing Xanax, like, and you know, this shit was cut with fentanyl.
Jesus.
You know, and he had no fucking idea. Obviously. No,
he didn't.
It happens to so many fucking people. You know, like the shirt that you put out with for your fucking brand, man.
Yeah, dude.
How many fucking names do you have on that shirt of people who have
the second lost one was like 230.
230 people.
Yeah, dude.
Most of those being local.
Most of them. Majority of them. San Diego.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah, dude.
It's so sad and sickening, man. And
yeah.
It's amazing what you do with this company, with
Thanks,
this brand, man. Just bringing awareness and
yeah. That particular shirt was both versions, but you know, on the first one, I put in, you know, my best friend, I put in one of my homies I grew up with that died 5 years ago, from an overdose. And it was, you know, a couple people who I've came across, you know, so it was like, it was getting really, really personal. At one point it was, my model, Eric Patton, was on there, and God, and the worst one was you know, my uncle, and when I threw my uncle in there, it just, I couldn't even do it anymore. I was like, I'm done. I cannot do this fucking project anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, I got, you know, went over the grieving, you know what I mean? And you know, I know my uncle was really proud of me, and he supported me, man, and all that. And I went and made another fucking shirt, you know, with 230.
Yeah.
And God, dude. And it's like the fucking names still keep coming, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a, you know, this epidemic, dude, it's not no bullshit. It's not it's a very real fucking thing, dude.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking sad. And I'm in a lot of situations, you know, because when I first started Fuck Fentanyl, I thought it was just, you know, a bunch of heroin addicts turning into fentanyl users, you know, dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't aware of the other side of it, where it's just people that have no intentions of doing opiates at all, you know, but they're given this counterfeit pill.
Yeah.
Or or even like marijuana that's just laced with it. Because, you know, people probably think that's bullshit because of dispensaries, but no, it's not.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I actually had at my work, somebody told me, they literally, somebody laced their weed with fentanyl because they just wanted to impress a girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some sick fucking thinking like that.
Yeah.
Almost killed somebody.
Yeah. This shit is, it's fucking sick.
Yeah, dude.
It's really fucked, dude. And, you know, like I said, man, I'm just I'm grateful that I made it out alive, and you know, if I can do anything to just help somebody else get out alive too, man, like that's what it's all about for me.
So what's your sobriety date, Eric?
So December 17th of 2017 was the last time that I did fentanyl.
Okay.
And then and then, like I said, the drinking went on for 5 years, and then I had my last drink. My sobriety date is August 26th of 2022.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Damn. Oh, man, so you're fucking 18 months now?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah, brother. Here. I'll give you another one.
Yeah, and it's fucking wild, man. Like, you know, recovery has, like I said, just become lifestyle, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
dude.
It's I fucking love it.
Yeah, dude. That's fucking awesome, bro.
Whole new way of life, man.
Fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. I fucking love it, dude. I mean, and you know, like I said, I respect your program, dude. You know what I mean? You're always been a fucking, again, you know, like a really cool, respectful person. You know, and I really believe that you do carry on the traditions versus somebody that says they carry on the traditions.
I mean, I try, you know, nobody does this shit perfectly.
No, yeah, you know? Exactly.
And all I can do is just try and be the best version of myself that I can be in each given moment, you know, and like, I still fuck up all the fucking time, you know, like, I can be an asshole for sure, but
yeah, yeah,
you know, one thing that all this shit has taught me is to actually care, you know, like looking at my character defects for the first time in my life and actually trying to be a better person.
Yeah.
Instead of only fucking caring about getting my fix. And if you're in my fucking way of doing that, you're going to become my enemy.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. I've turned from such a pessimistic, nihilistic person, just constantly living in existential dread,
yeah,
to someone who's genuinely happy.
Yeah,
like 90% of the fucking time.
Dude. That's a high percentage.
It is, dude. That's fucking crazy, man. And like bad shit still fucking happens, you know. Just cause you get clean and sober, like life's not all fucking, you know,
rainbows and butterflies and pink clouds and shit.
Yeah. Fuck the pink clouds. That shit's all fucking, you know, fake. And then like once you get past that, you know, and you actually like are faced with reality when you're sober and you realize that like life is life.
Yeah.
It's not just your first fucking 90 days of like everything being easy and perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and like I've heard people say like, oh, your first year's the easiest because you're getting fucking congratulated on for what you should have been fucking doing.
Oh, you need a pat in the back.
You know, and when I took my year, like I took several year tokens and shit, you know, in different fellowships and stuff. Yeah. And but like at one of them, you know, somebody gave me a 24-hour token.
Oh, really?
And I was like, fuck yeah, this is where it's at, dude.
Yeah.
Because like some people come up on their year and they're like, oh, I'm going to fucking graduate this shit. It's like, no, dude, it's another fucking day.
Just nope.
You know, a fucking drink or a drug is literally a fucking arm's reach away or phone call away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like this is a lifelong battle and choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
And, you know, I actually would like to quote one of my favorite people, Matt, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Matt Drugaholic. he often speaks about it, you know, like how, you know, he's relapsed after having multiple years, you know, I think three times, I think. Mm. And it's because every time he gets clean and sober, he has that graduate mentality. Mm. And you start to think that you don't need it anymore and you're better than it. And
yeah, yeah. So, like, when I came into the rooms this time and actually opened a book for the first fucking time, right? Like, I still had plans to just dry out for 30 days and learn how to drink like a gentleman.
Oh, you know? Very nice.
And then popping the book open, and I don't know if I am breaking traditions here or whatever, man, but like reading the doctor's opinion.
Okay.
And just having it explain this allergy that we have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like,
it's very real.
It's like an allergic reaction to any type of fucking substance, you know, and it once getting, you know, I love the saying, a taste of honey is worse than none at all.
Ah.
Like once you get a taste of that shit, you just want more.
Fuck yeah.
You know, and like normal people who don't have this disease, they can fucking drink half a beer and then just
put it down.
Yeah, put it down. And it's like, no, once once I get a fucking taste of this shit, the power of choice is out the fucking window for me.
Yeah.
And people who don't understand addiction, they're like, oh no, it's not like that. And that's why it's so important for, you know, us addicts and alcoholics to really look out for each other.
Yeah, dude.
Because nobody is going to understand us like we do.
Like we do.
Yeah.
The therapeutic value of one addict helping another.
Yes. It's very real shit.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah, when I was at the Freedom Ranch, I didn't want to believe the allergy. I just thought it was heroin. And like, dude, I had to do that soul searching inventory, man, where I was like, no, it's fucking me, dude. Did you
do the one substance to another thing?
Early on, I when I was starting heroin, I would like take little small breaks with weed and alcohol. But like once I got like a really strong run in me, like nothing was good enough. And I remember the last time I relapsed, it was I went in to crash, and I graduated there after 93 days, and then I walked fucking what was it, like 4 or 5 miles to the National City of the Jungle. And I was gonna tell myself was like, I'm just gonna do one fucking shot. That's it. And I'll just tell on myself, you know, maybe I'll just smoke weed and drink after that and I'll be cool. Everything will be under control, but I need this fucking shot.
One last shot.
And of course I buy enough for two shots. one for there and then one for the way back. And I it was amazing. It was like, yes, it's back. And then after, you know, the high went away, I knew I was fucked. I knew I'm going to do the exact same shit. And I still did it anyways. I had too much fear. I had too much like an attachment. You know, it was my higher power. It was my God, and I needed that in my life. And it didn't matter what the consequences was. I was going to keep going.
How long were you out for that time?
It was, okay, so that was in November of 2012, and then I kept using it until March 5th, 2013. Until my other higher power, the Chula Vista Police Department, came.
Oh, man. I love when you say love that at meetings.
Yeah, dude. And man, I was bitter as fuck, dude.
Probably the only thing that the police have ever been good for, dude.
Yeah. Fine. I know. They did one thing. And this guy was an asshole, dude. This guy was a fuck. I hated this fucking dude. It made me so happy that he fucking was trying to like look in the bushes thinking I had a huge sack of heroin, and like I actually, he just couldn't find it on me. So I was in the back of the cop car, and I had my little gram, and I took it in with me, and I'm like, ha ha ha, you didn't get it. But they had already busted me with a rig, and that had like a little shot. So they gave me another fucking felony possession for that.
And like looking back on it, man, it's like, one of the fucking best things that ever happened for you, not to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing that I've learned in recovery is to just that psychic change, that change in perspective that we can have, man. And, you know, I can find a silver lining in almost anything now.
Yeah.
You know, and absolutely. I really love that phrase. Like, you know, are these things really happening to you? Are you a victim, or are they happening for you? Can you learn from it?
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And, I'm not going to name drop, but a homie of ours in the rooms, you know,
yeah.
He really taught me to be grateful for the bad shit that happens to me.
Mm.
You know, because it's a learning experience. It's going to make me stronger when I do get through it.
Yeah.
And then I can share that wisdom with someone else who may be going through it too.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a wild way to look at it.
No, it is. Be grateful for the bad things.
Yeah.
It sounds easy, but
it took a lot of work, man. And yeah. it took a lot of fucking pain, a lot of fucking misery to be willing to completely, you know, reshape all of my perspectives and just how I view life, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why, you know, when I first heard someone say this, like, hey, a grateful alcoholic, I was like, get the fuck out of here. You know, and then and then it started to click over a bit of time, and it's like, yeah, like being an addict and alcoholic was you know, in a weird paradoxical way, one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it has led me to this new life, you know?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I am grateful for everything that's happened. The good, the bad, everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. It's all or nothing kind of a deal.
Absolutely. All or nothing. You know, you cannot half-ass this shit.
Heck yeah. Absolutely, dude. Well, man, thank you so much for coming on here, man.
Bro, thanks for having me on here. Like,
I really love this.
Yeah, I really look up to you, man.
Thank you, man.
Fucking awesome seeing you take 11 years last Tuesday, man.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking rad, dude. I'm really proud of you for doing this, and it really helps out the community.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. And thank you, man, for everything you do, man. And I want to just keep seeing you grow, man, and keep seeing, you know, see you thrive, man.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah, brother. All right, man. Love you, dude.
Love you too, brother.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.